Welcome to Syntax.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Front End Happy Hour podcast.
Welcome to this week's JS Party.
Live from Shipshape Studios, this is Whiskey Web and Whatnot with your hosts, Robbie the Wagner and me, Charles William Carpenter III. That's right, Charles. We drink whiskey and talk about web development. I mean, it's all in the name. It's not that deep. This is Whiskey Web and Whatnot. Do not adjust your set.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to a live Whiskey Web and Whatnot. I don't have a catchy name for it today. Cabernet, Code, and something. Chatter. Oh, chatter.
It's literally Cabernet.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, so we are live here. I have my guest host, Nick Taylor. How's it going, Nick?
Not too bad. Doing pretty good. It's been a minute. It's been like, what, 12 hours since
yes,
the last season?
Yes. Seen a lot of each other.
Yeah.
And our guest today is B. Dougie. How's it going?
I am super well. I'm actually no more talks. I'm just eating salty popcorn and in the nice. Cabernet corner.
Nice. Cool. Well, yeah, before we get into anything else, let's start with some Cabernet. We got some Josh. Everyone's a fan of Josh, just because I think it's a silly name to just be Josh.
Josh? Oh. I'm not familiar with Josh.
Yeah.
I don't know about his game.
Yeah, I always like...
Apparently he brings his game.
Yeah. Speaking of games, I will play games with my friends and like, hey, Josh is going to join us tonight to play...
I'll pass that down.
Here we go.
I have never heard of Josh.
No, is this like regional?
It must be, I guess. I didn't know it wasn't a...
No, like does it have a winery? Like what's the location of the winery?
I don't know. Let's check.
Aside from the location in my cup. Oh,
got a bunch of my pants.
Oh, Josh.
Oh, Josh. Yeah, you're always messing with my pants.
Sloppy right. Josh.
Okay. Yeah. Let's try some. All right, so I've got a... do you have a toast for us? All right.
Yeah.
Here's the Open Sauce, the platform that reminded us our commits actually mattered, even if our bosses never noticed. You helped us track our GitHub glory, and now you're just another repo in the great archive of acquisitions. Woo. So today, we pour one out for all the green squares and the spicy little startup that made open source feel delicious. Cheers to Open Sauce. You pushed, you merged, you shipped your legacy.
Amazing. I'm going to tear up. Man, what a toast. Yes, that was a good time.
Yeah, AI is good at making toast, if you didn't know.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, Open Sauce was good times.
Yeah, I don't know how we're starting this podcast, but yeah, Nick worked with me at Open Sauce for a good year at that point. You're half the journey. Yeah, now the journey is completed. I actually got word that the last person who came over in the Linux Foundation acquisition just announced a departure last week, so... It literally is finished.
Okay. Yeah, I tried to go to it earlier, and it was like, no. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's sad. But yeah, the end of an era. We may get a little more into that here in a little bit, but we got some hot takes, which we maybe did with you before. You've been on the show before. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, I still have that bottle. I haven't finished it. So
nice.
I don't remember what we talked about, but yeah, the whiskey was good.
Yeah. So yeah, I have a condensed list, but let's just do a few here. Git rebase or git merge?
Rebase.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, pure history. But, you know, actually, I am a squasher. So squash first and then rebase, and you always have historical record. Merge commits are messy.
Oh, they are. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The worst is when you're actually squashing and doing things really clean, but then still merging. So it's like really nice history of what you actually wanted, but merged.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I get you. Is HTML a programming language?
That's a good question. You do cool things with it. It is a template that you could write in language, in natural language. It's not even natural. It's semantic. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. That's not a very
There's no right answer. Yeah. It's just to spark conversation. So then, is CSS a programming language?
I think it's getting there. You can do some performative things in there. And not just like animations, but like, yeah, you can do some cool things. So, yeah. I don't know. Turing complete, there's no like zeros and ones or like no reasoning. Or sorry, what's the Turing complete? Sorry, I didn't get a CS degree.
I don't.
It's always the cool thing to say though. Yeah, something Turing complete.
Yeah, yeah. Non-deterministic and AI.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. CSS
you've run out of ChatGPT tokens. Please check it back in at 10 p.m.
You're absolutely right. Okay, sidebar on the left or right in VS Code?
Sidebar on the left, agent editor thing on the right. Yeah, okay. I've been a right side. I know Cursor has like gone back and forth. Like Cursor, I think a lot of cool kids are doing on the left side. But I feel like having my file menu on the left. Like I'm just so used to that.
Yeah, yeah, that's the default. And yeah, so I think the only person who has said the right, like taking the time to move it to not the default, is Jason Langsdorf.
He's
like,
what a
this
weirdo.
Is objectively the correct answer. Like, it is not a subjective choice. And I'm like, no, it is.
I got bad news. I'm one of the right side boys, too.
Oh, are you?
The main reason why I do it is when I'm live streaming and you're live coding, it keeps bumping it back and forth
right.
If you open and close it. And if you have it on the right side, it doesn't affect it as much.
Because all the white space, yeah.
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 But I also do weird stuff. Like I do stuff on purpose to hurt my brain so it makes me think, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
You know, I might be tempted. Honestly,
all right, you heard it here first. You heard it here first.
I agree with that reasoning that it doesn't bounce your code around when you're opening and closing it. I just don't open and close it that often.
Yeah.
So it's like, it doesn't bother me.
I might be with you. I actually keep it closed a lot.
Yeah.
Like, unless I'm like, okay, what happened here again? Like, let me navigate. But usually I got a mental model of like where things are and what names are that I don't actually open that often.
And if you have more than like 10 files, you're just searching for them anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, I'm definitely Command P gang. Even though I love Visual Studio Code, I'm like always using shortcuts. We were talking about this yesterday about like people talking about Vim and stuff and shortcuts. And it's like, I don't know. I'm basically VS Code for me at this point is just like glorified like terminal editor kind of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I use the IntelliJ key bindings, unfortunately. I started out with WebStorm and learned all of that. And I was like, I don't want to change. I should have changed, though, because now everybody's like, oh, hit this thing. And I'm like, no, my keys don't do that.
Yeah, it's a bit awkward. I'm a Vim user as well, and I got the Vim bindings. But none of my key bindings in Vim transferred over. Honestly, I don't even use VS Code anymore. I'm in Zed and NeoVim.
Okay.
So I go back and forth. Because Zed, I have no plugins on there, so it's like fast, no bloat. VS Code, opposite problem, too much stuff in there, and I don't have the time to go clean it up.
Yeah, yeah. I've been hearing, I think Adam Argyle, my new co-host, is using Zed a good bit. He's saying it's come a long way, because like when I first tried it, I don't know, 2-3 years ago or something? When did it come out? Like, it's been a little while.
It was open source like 2019. Like it was pretty early.
Okay. Maybe it's been longer than I thought.
Because you know the history of Zed? It's the team that built Atom at GitHub.
Yes.
Okay.
And GitHub.
You're jogging my memory. We've had the guy, what's his name? The guy that
I forgot his name.
It.
I can see his face.
Yeah, he was on the show and told us all about it.
So this kind of like had a cool project they were working on, and they didn't really take funding until like 2022, like kind of later. And like it was at that point, it had so many users, but then they kind of figured out what the product was going to be that would make money. Don't ask me what it is. I have no idea how they make money.
How does anyone make money?
Yeah. Yeah, they show up every day.
I just asked Josh.
Yes.
Just look at the bottom of the cup, and that's where the money comes from.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Josh is probably doing okay, I would think.
Yeah.
Rails or Laravel?
I don't know Laravel, so I guess Rails.
All right. Like, you don't have to know either. You can just have an opinion. I don't use either of them.
Laravel seems really cool. Like, they seem to be cool. Like, a lot of cool kids are over there. I just don't have, like, the brain power to do another thing. So I have built a couple of Rails apps recently just for kicks and giggles, right, really.
Yeah.
To see what's still there. That was my first sort of framework, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the batteries included framework model has gotten kind of lost, and now everything is just a React component of some sort cobbled together.
I mean, Nick, you're a Rails person. Like, I feel like the AI world leans into like strong opinions.
Yeah,
because then the agent won't go off the rails, pun intended.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. Have you written Rails recently?
Not recently. When I worked at Dev2, they were a Rails shop, and like the thing I found about Rails was to your point about the batteries included and stuff. Even though I hadn't really done any Rails until that point, it was very approachable. And the thing is, like, you've heard this, at least in the React world, people have been trying to mimic what Rails does in React land. Like, I know, like, the Remix guys, they've been, like, trying to do that kind of stuff. And Laravel, I think, kind of modeled themselves on, like, the Rails batteries included. It's one of those, it depends. Like, people who like to customize literally everything, like, it's cool for a while, but, like, at the end of the day, you got to ship stuff and, like, making some bespoke React combo of stuff, like when we used to have like React boiler templates or stuff, it's like, I don't really care that much anymore now. I'm just like, I just need to ship something and this is good enough, you know? Like,
yeah. I think a lot of people disagree though. They don't want to ship stuff. They want to spend 2 years making that bespoke React framework.
Well, how else are you going to get those zero users, right?
I know, right?
or keep them. Yeah. I spent all summer building a bunch of projects, and one of them, actually, the one I talked about in the keynote, finally has users. Not intentionally. Is this more? I've got a weird following where people actually look at my GitHub and they're like, "Oh, I saw you ship a thing. Why are you looking at that?" It's public because I need a free repo and I need free access to actions.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'd be private. But actions is expensive when it's a private repo.
Especially if you got to run a Mac OS one. Those things are brutal.
Yeah. Never. Funny enough, I was at GitHub when they were trying to figure out the Mac OS thing, and it was like the trash can Mac time. And it was legitimately just a bunch of trash cans, like the cylinders, like in a room.
That's what it ran on.
Yeah. That was how we put it.
Hey, that's how Apple does it too. All of their stuff runs on Mac Minis under desks.
Yeah. So. Well, Minis make way more sense. But the trash can thing, they can't stack trash cans.
Yeah. The logistics are harder.
Yeah. Well, we come a long way.
Those Mac OS runners, it cracks me up because like we've got like our product is open core, so we've got a open source repo public. And we have Mac runners that run, and when, what's the new version of Mac called? Tahoe?
Tahoe.
Yeah. Sounds right.
So like I was doing work and like my PR was like all the build steps were passing, and then Tahoe got released and I'm like, what's going on? Like the builds are failing now. And like that classic thing that you see on your actual Mac where it says you got to update the tools for Xcode for that was happening on the Mac runners. And I didn't clue in right away, but anyways.
Oh, that thing is so annoying. Like, I just want to use Git. Don't make me agree to something.
Well, nowadays, like, I actually get my agent. So I'll use, like, the continuous CLI to basically set up my system. So I had it set up Tmux for me. I've done a couple other things where my machine was, like, taking off all the time. Turns out I had a Docker running, like, multiple Docker images running.
That'll do it.
And I was like, hey, I don't know what's going on, but could you just check to see like what's taking all the CPU usage? I guess I could have opened up the little box thing, but it was like, you do it. And it works. So like I honestly don't set up anything. Like my NeoVim config was a port from my Janus Vim from back in the day. Like I had the same template, the same dot files, but I never really updated it. So I was like, take this and convert it to NeoVim. And it took a couple tries, but yeah, it cleaned up my dot files for me.
Nice. Very nice. Okay. Related to AI, is AI to blame when people do dumb shit with it?
Honestly, it's usually, I'll be honest, I gave a whole talk on this, which is like, it's literally the person at the end of the keyboard.
Yeah.
So like, if you're bad at writing tests, you're going to write bad tests with AI. If you're bad at documentation or bad at figuring things out or even shipping code, you're probably going to ship pretty bad code to AI because like, when you know what you don't know, like you do a better job. Sorry, I heard a story of a company that a lot of people know about, and there was an engineer who was like re-implementing a programming language using AI credits that they had at the company. It was pretty fascinating. They don't work there anymore. But like, when you just do like dumb things like that, like why would you need a new programming language for like this problem? It's like AI can like build something bespoke for this situation. Like it's probably not the right tool for the job.
I don't know. There need to be some kind of disclaimers maybe, because like people don't think about what they're doing. AI just wants to solve the problem. It's not caring if it's like secure or good. It's just all right, I'm going to expose all your secret keys because I need to like push them up to this like thing to do something.
The script that has like literally the service token directly in the script.
Yeah.
Well, I've got that, but I've created rules to like never do that again. But the one thing is like when you have like 20 tests fail because of some legitimate change and like you got to update the test, AI doesn't really know. Well, at least I'll pick on Claude. So the Claude Sonnet model doesn't know to like refactor, it just knows to add. So it always adds green code around the place. So then it'll be like, okay, 20 tests fail, 17 are passing. We're good. Let's move along. Yeah. The three are not met. Don't worry about those. Let's just like move forward. I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? Like fix the test.
Oh, I know.
So I have a rule that's basically if you touch it, make it better. And it's actually pretty good because it will actually look at that. It's like the first one up. And if you touch it, make it better. So if it's like, oh, a 17 test passed. Well, if you touch it, make it better. So fix the S3 test.
Yeah.
Nice. It's like, oh, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the classic. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah, great. So I actually had Codex come back and be like, it was like OMG or something like that. It was something dumb because it was trying to be cool.
Yeah.
So I was like, OMG, I can't believe I did that. I was like, what the? Please stop.
It's like that Steve Buscemi with the skateboard. Hello, fellow kids.
Yeah, that's GPT-5 right now. Yeah, it does. It's like gosh darn or whatever. Like, dude, you're trying too hard. Just like ship the code, dude.
Yeah.
Put the fries in the bag.
as long as it's not saying 6-7, that's all like my...
Oh, boy.
All right, so we're at All Things Open. Tell me about how open source has influenced your life.
Man, open source, I don't think I'd be here without open source. So back when I was just a struggling artist, and I'm just kidding, I actually mentioned in the keynote, my intro into programming was always copy and pasting from stuff I could find in open source.
Sure.
So I used to play a lot of like Counter-Strike or Rainbow Six Rogue Spirit, like you would mod it and find something on SourceForge. And I was like, oh, cool, like copy, paste, do something. Or like back when ActionScript was a thing with Flash games, like, oh, copy and paste, do a thing. Or MySpace, copy and paste, do a thing. So when I decided I was actually going to like try to build something for real, I ended up just like taking existing code and remixing it into like making it work for me, which I didn't know that was like, that was a real thing. People did it all the time, like Stack Overflow development. That's how I learned. It was like, oh, solve problem, copy and paste, and shift it into like how I can make it, which is perfect for AI.
Yeah.
Like I'm 100% like, oh, shape of what I want to do. Read this file, build it again for me, but make it match my design system. So like it is like unlocked where I don't have a CS degree. I was able to like just get in and feel like I could do something. And that's how I've been managing my imposter syndrome ever since.
Nice, nice. Yeah, so you mentioned your talk a few times. You want to give us the highlights? And
yeah,
so what did you talk about?
I gave two talks. So one was about finding future maintainers in the world of AI. Focus around like AI agents are like, they do a really good job on doing things, but that's not always the right thing. But we have like a bit of like, it's always an epidemic around open source maintainer and like people being burnt out.
Yeah.
Like there's not a lot of people left over to actually write the code.
Yeah.
And it's even worse now with AI. So I was like encouraging folks to like write issues, do PR review, like introduce the human in the loop. Like,
yeah.
Don't always trust the AI to do everything for you, because then that's the knowledge transfer. So like once the PRs merge, the story ends. And like that's at the point where the story starts, where you can like go back and be like, hey, agent, let's go read some PRs together. And I told the story of like when I joined GitHub day one, you would sit in a room with all the people onboarding and they would teach you how to use GitHub for 90 minutes. And I had already been like coding full time at that point. So most other engineers are like just doing a bunch of stuff. I was going to the PRs and like going all the way back and paginating and then looking at all the founders code and looking at the issues that were open, like all the incendiary things that I knew about outside. I was like, I looked for those issues. And it's like crazy how easy it is like to see that when you work at GitHub,
because
it's all in the repo, like nothing's deleted. I don't think when Microsoft acquired us, like if they even deleted anything, it's just like there in the open, full value. Yeah, like storytelling through code, like, but don't forget to like write docs. If you're going to vibe code the product, at least write some docs. So the vibe coding can still happen the next time you're in a session.
Yeah.
And then this afternoon, I get a 45-minute keynote on continuous AI. So I work at Continuous, my day job, I do DX there. And the focus is you can build custom agents for bespoke situations. So like if you have an agent that just code reviews, or if an agent that only fixes TypeScript errors, and like make sure your TypeScript files are pristine, like you can build agents for just that thing. So whether you like AI or you don't, like there are things you don't like doing. Like I don't like writing types.
Yeah.
Like I honestly would be the any person. Like the way AI is like, oh, I'll just put any there or unknown.
Yeah.
It's like, that's me. Me and the AI are like, we're synergistic, but I got to force the AI to be like, no, let's write some types. I have rules around types. This is how we reuse types around the project. So I gave like a 45-minute demo that actually kind of failed because we actually shipped some stuff that broke the build. So I did some hand waving on our hosted thing, but I showed a bunch of like local CLI stuff.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I hadn't considered like making specific agents to be like, you just care about types.
Yeah, like, it is actually very rewarding when you like get very granular on that, where like there's no one at your company that's going to be like, oh, I'm the TypeScript person. Like if you're probably going to get fired. Like, dude, like if you spend all your day like massaging types and reviewing types, like that's not going to happen. But like for an agent, oh, why don't we just have a TypeScript agent? And this is how like when I worked at GitHub, they had specific knowledge people. Like we had the GraphQL internal GraphQL team, like that was not their full-time job, but they were like the torchbearers of like how GraphQL worked at GitHub. Or like the payments team, which they didn't have a payments team, but there were some folks who would go other places but come back for code review. And there were like certain individuals who, when it came to like system architecture and database design, were like when they open an issue, like everyone stops and reads it. Because like this is the future of GitHub. Like when we shipped GitHub Actions, like there was an architecture design, a long doc, and a couple issues, and a couple demos that were recorded. Like this is what we're building. Like this is the future. Same to Copilot. When Uge is the CEO of Expo, he left to go do it in a company, but he also was the first. It's funny, there's a lot of people who claim to be like the creator of Copilot or the folks who named it. And like, that's all true. It was like a team of like six to seven. But Uge was the one that kicked off the idea of like taking OpenAI and doing a thing with it. So like when he started doing demos, they were pretty bad demos, but they were like really interesting. And like, there was like interesting story there that you can like stop and listen and learn. So like, we're losing a bit of that in the AI revolution, that you should like, if you're gonna make a decision with AI, write it down. So at least the next person is not going to be very confused and like, why this code is like weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
You're mentioning, well, I know you work at Continue, but you're talking about the agents. So does that mean you guys, I know you shipped a agent runner for like CI/CD pipelines. When you're talking about the agents, like the TypeScript agent and stuff, are those sub agents kind of like Claude or?
Yeah. So honestly, that's actually the best way to kind of mental frame this is sub agents and Claude. But sub-agents in Claude that you could host and share across your team. So like with Claude, you can host those specifically in your .claude folder in your repo. But what I love about sub-agents in Claude is like they're bespoke but also ephemeral. So if I have a refactoring agent in Claude, like I'll delete that all the time. And like things change all the time. So like let's just delete that. And with Continue, it's less about deletion, but it's more about sharing. So if you have a team, like we actually work with a lot of enterprises across multiple teams. Like most of our enterprise sales is like minimum 100 seats. So your platform engineering, trying to scale AI within an organization, there's a chance that you figure some stuff out that you want to go into the room and start training other engineers. So like you build all these sort of sub agents or what we call them agent workflows to basically say, okay, this is the TypeScript experience. This is if you ever have a TypeScript or a JavaScript thing, this is the thing you pull for. And then you could also make a choice of like, oh, we can actually go like not Sonnet, but Haiku 3.5. Because like it's cheaper. It's so much cheaper when you have rules and a bunch of other stuff and prompts set up for your agent to be successful. We don't have to use the biggest model all the time. And I think that's our difference between like Claude's selling models. Like they're literally a foundational model. Yeah. So they're always going to push you to the biggest model. But in enterprise, you might not have access to all that. So like we can get you getting that same experience on a smaller model.
So you support like OpenAI, Anthropic. Yep. Do you do local models too? I can't remember.
Local models is how we started. So our CTO came out of MIT. He actually went to school with the CEO of Cursor. So graduated same class. But he built a VS Code extension to make OLAMA work in VS Code. So this predates Copilot, predates almost everyone. And that was like the focus for like 18 months. And then earlier this year, we built a SaaS product. You could also bring your own tokens in the local version. But the SaaS product basically gives you a hosted experience. So that's the SaaS product that enterprises use, the hub, hub.continue.dev. So like if you want to deploy this to your 1,000 engineers across your global team, distributed team, like this would be the product you sort of have that data plane orchestration on.
Okay, so I'm not sure I fully understand. So like,
oh yeah, buzzword.
Is it, it's like if you have a team of engineers and they all want to do a certain task, like the TypeScript thing you were talking about.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They would log into this hub, choose the TypeScript one, and be like, I want to do this thing in that, or like...
Yeah, more than likely, you're not even choosing. Like, it kicks off. So, unfortunately, my demo failed and I didn't get to the part of the code review. But, like, CodeRabbit and Codo are both sponsors here. And, like, you could just, like, install those code review tools or use Copilot off, like, for face value. But the interesting part about that is, like, where's that data go? Like if it's a hosted server, your entire code base goes off in it's hard to use in enterprise basically. So like
right.
I have a code review agent that basically I have rules on how my code is written in the project and how we write documentation. So I will have a code review agent workflow that kicks off every time the PR opens. So It's funny because I didn't get to this part, but my entire talk was going to talk about the GitHub action workflow that this kicks off the agent. And the way we power this is through our CLI. So just like Claude Code, a CLI. But our CLI is that not just meant to like deliver for the agent, give an experience. It's meant to really just give you a custom bespoke config. So then you have like rules for your specific situation. So I'll land the plane with, in Germany, they have car manufacturers that use Continue. And the reason why it's important for them is they have specific bespoke language that runs on your computer and your Mercedes. Oh, sorry. But it runs on your computer and your luxury car.
Of unknown origins.
Yeah. Whatever car. Who knows what German luxury brands there are. But basically, those languages that car manufacturers use have to be no memory. So it's like a language that's not trained on Cursor. It's not trained in Copilot. It's bespoke, has to run in your own models, your own training.
Okay.
We work with that situation. Gotcha. So if you're like, okay, memory safe, like all the stuff that's like very specific to like cars need to run 100 miles an hour or 100 kilometers an hour and not crash. Like, you cannot have a Stack Overflow while you're trying to pump the brakes.
Yeah.
So there's like regulatory places and like finance and stuff like that where Continuum works very well out the box because we're open source first. Think about having your custom cursor, batteries included experience, but you ship it for your team within the enterprise.
Okay.
It's hard to grok if you don't work at a large company that has a bunch of these like best practices or like think like rules and regulations, but it works very well in places that are highly regulated.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. I don't know. I'm never allowed to use any fun things. I work for IBM, so it's
hey. IBM uses us.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, yeah.
Then maybe I can do fun things.
We did a co-launch with, you talked to Gabe Greenberg. He's like the DevRel architect
Okay.
guy.
Yeah, I'm HashiCorp, so we just got acquired.
Oh, you're the other side. Yeah,
so I don't know. Like, we're having to change everything we do to like everything they do.
And I experienced that with we were a small startup inside of Microsoft. It's called GitHub. And GitHub still uses Slack to this day. And I imagine because GitHub's all the chat apps and the deploys happen in Slack, you can't do that in Teams.
Same with us. Yeah. Like we had to switch from Zoom to Teams for meetings, but like still chat in Slack and do all the stuff there. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I love is like, so we like the Terraform MCP, like if you got to like spin up like an environment or do a thing that's ephemeral, what's great about this, like you could hook the MCP up in the Continue to your models and run this like deployed on the cloud without needing to have a lot of DevOps behind the scenes experience. One of the hardest things I ever did was when we migrated off of Heroku out of GitHub. I had no knowledge of DevOps, but we had to all move to Kubernetes.
Okay.
And I ran this, your sweater was stars.github.com.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had to migrate that site off of Heroku because Heroku had a vulnerability that we found. So like before we could disclose that, we had to move all of our stuff off Heroku for security reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I didn't know how to use Kubernetes. So I had to like, I had to go beg engineers because I was in DevRel. So I had to like beg engineers to be like, hey, I know this is not your job, but like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And these docs are like, they're cooked. Like, I have no idea what this is. And I think I used cooked right. I might have used that backwards.
We'll ask chat.
Yeah. Hey, chat. Did I use cook right?
Yeah. Are we cooking?
Yeah. So basically, I had to like beg an engineer to be like, hey, can we like pair on this? But it'd been great to have an agent and be like, hey, check out, we call it a Moda. If you can take the Moda MCP like in conjunction to like your Terraform thing, because we also leverage a lot of that stuff, can you just like get me unblocked and like deploy my thing and make it work? So it might have took me like, I think it was like around Christmas time. I might have spent like months, January to March, like trying to figure it out myself. And then finally, just like shout out to Mike McQuaid, who's like the co-founder of Workbrew, also maintainer of Homebrew.
Yeah.
He just did it for me. I'm like, dude, thanks so much. Like,
solid.
I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, I'm just like, I just stand on stage and talk about cool things like Beyonce.
But yeah, shout out to all the people that have helped all of us with all the things, because that's part of like being a senior engineer, I feel like, is knowing the people that know the answers or knowing the way to find the answers. That's the people, the sources, the everywhere you might want to look. Yeah, just trying to do it yourself is like, you're going to waste a lot of time.
Yeah. And it's like, man, in a remote company, it's even worse. It's like perpetuated to like, you're like, man, I don't want to like DM people in Slack and be like, hi.
What's up?
Like, let me just engage because I'm too scared to say I'm dumb.
Yeah.
But hey, hi, I'm dumb. And I do not know how DevOps works at this company. Don't tell anybody, but also, can you do this for me? Like, oh, yeah, there goes your performance review. Yeah.
This just in, whiskey.fund is now open for all your merch needs. That's right, Robbie. We're hearing reports of hats, sweaters, and t-shirts, as well as a link to join our Discord server. What's a Discord server? Just read the prompter, man. Hit subscribe, leave us a review on your favorite podcast app, and tell your friends about our broadcast. It really does help us reach more people and keeps the show growing. All right, back to your regularly scheduled programming.
All right, who needs some more Josh? Anybody?
I could take another
little more Josh.
I'll say hi to Josh.
All right.
Shout out to the Render ATL popcorn that's downstairs.
Oh, branded popcorn?
Yeah. They're doing popcorn downstairs, here. And it was it was quite salty. I don't know if I got like the bottom of the batch, but man.
Okay.
So it was good though. I needed it. I didn't do lunch. I missed the salads and sandwiches.
Yeah, I remembered about lunch when they were like pushing all of the lunch away on carts as fast as they could. I was like, I'm going to just skip that.
Yeah, I don't know if this is like a...
Thanks, man.
Are these Teamsters? But they're like on the money on this this venue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're like cleaning up stuff, putting stuff away. It's like, hey, I wanted that sticker. Like, where's that going?
Yeah, I got to say, though, shout out to Todd Lewis and the whole crew here, because this is my second year. I was at the AI one, too, in March, but like... They run a tight ship. Like, it's really well executed. Like, I did my talk just before this, and the AV people just came in. They're like, boom, set up lights. They're like, I said, there's something up with the projector. They just went boom, 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 and I was go time.
Yeah. Shout out to Light Mode, too, as well. I love this community, because I tell everyone before my talk, like, hey, interrupt me. Ask me questions. This is your time. You could have, like, literally bounced and, like, did something else cooler than listening to an AI talk. One of the attendees actually shouted out, like, hey, switch to Light Mode. Because the room was so bright, I didn't realize how bright it would be. And I had to figure out how to change to Light Mode. Because, like, who uses that anymore?
I don't. I mean, I set everything to dark. Sometimes I'll, like, do it based on the time of day, but, like, usually dark.
Yeah, I used to do that for GitHub. I would switch to Light Mode in the daytime and then dark mode. I actually had... I forgot what plugin it was, but it would change your system dark mode to light mode based on the time of day. I don't think it actually works anymore. It's like too many versions of Mac OS removed.
Yeah, a lot of private APIs there probably. But
you know, I'm going to vibe code that.
Yeah,
and Apple script.
Oh, man, I did a thing one time. You run Bootcamp before, I assume, on a Mac where you can run Windows?
Yeah.
So, you know, on the Windows side, you can just click the little thing and like restart into Mac OS easily. Yeah. But on Mac OS, it's like you got to go into settings, you got to change your startup disk, you got to press all these buttons, you got to put in your password, you got to, like, it won't just let you restart. So I wrote a little, like, automation script thing that, like, clicked all that.
Ah, nice.
And just put a thing in the menu bar to do it, but it stopped working after, like, a day. It did not, very unreliable.
Yeah, that's how I write software, unreliably.
Yeah,
consistently unreliable.
Yeah. So you tweeted that, I'm convinced there will not be a clear winner in the new AI coding era. Just a lot of happy devs getting new toys all the time. I'm curious what makes you say that. You don't think someone will win and everyone else will fall by the wayside?
No, I think who takes the most money will win. I think like OpenAI is like what a bazillion-dollar company, and like Cursor took a $900 million round. But that doesn't promise people to be like actual winners. It just gets a lot of momentum into their camp. But I actually tweeted that because I think it was like the week that GitHub announced a bunch of stuff, and then OpenAI announced a Codex model for their Codex product as well. Sonnet 4.5 shipped. And then a bunch of other stuff. Like, it was a week before the Granite 4 models launch. So when it comes to models and tools, I think that we're good. Like, there's so many cool things around, like, AI. So, like, if you don't want to do it in the command line. Was it Sculptor came out a couple weeks ago? And then there's also Conductor.
That sounds fancy.
Yeah, I haven't heard of Sculptor.
Yeah, Sculptor is, like, extremely new. It's a company that, like, raised $200 million to train models. And then their, like, entry point into the market is just, like, really, like, nice experience when it comes to like UIs for like interacting with Claude code. But then like all the tools are out there, like we could just leverage them, and a lot of them are like, you gotta pay for some stuff, but like a lot of it's like shockingly cheap. So like,
yeah,
I pay for Codex.
Stay that way though.
Well, at the Google, OpenAI, Microsoft level, $20 a month is fine.
Yeah,
but for companies that gotta make real money, probably not. Like Devin's like $500 a month. I've never used it, but it's enough that I won't use it.
I just don't like the concept. Like the whole branding around it, I'm just like, fuck you.
it's real because I don't know, man. I interviewed for that company and like it felt like they didn't know what they were doing. They just kind of like they had a really good moment that they had momentum from. So like shout out to the team.
Yeah. Well, now they have Windsurf, right? They're the ones that acquired Windsurf. Yeah.
So I haven't used it since. Switch is over there too now.
Yeah,
right?
Switch is there. I think Switch is excited about what they're shipping soon. So like we'll see. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'll eventually use it. Like, I was never a Cursor user until I joined Continue, because I'm like, I should probably use a bunch of other stuff. I was very much like a chat with Copilot.
Sure.
And like, don't edit my code. Just like, tell me stuff, and I'll write it. And I was perfectly fine with that. But then I got a job in the space, and I'm like, oh, okay, let's go all in. Yeah. Let's see how far it can take me.
Well, it's annoying when it's doing it for you, but doing a bad job. Because it does a lot of that. And I'm like, just stop, please. Like, give me a little suggestion and then we'll iterate from there. Instead of like, oh, I just edited 100 files. Like,
Oh, man. I have like, I set up a pre-commit hook. I ended up starting a project, contrib.info. I started as bolt.new. It was vibe code. I was like, hey, let me see if I can like repeat some things that I want in open source that has now been sunsetted. But I'm like, I just need that chart, that one chart with the faces. Can we make that happen?
Are you still on that one?
Yeah, I just dropped a Figma attempt, like basically a Figma design, and it made it. I'm like, cool.
That's cool.
I get this AI stuff. But then it had like any types everywhere. So this is all really bad TypeScript code. So then I'm like, cool, let me just like set up a linter so I can start fixing this stuff. 3,500 linting errors. So I'm like, okay, let me set up a rule that you don't fix any linting stuff unless you touch the file.
Yep.
So like if you touch it, fix it. But every now and then it'll forget. And it will like touch 300 plus files.
Oh,
GitHub now doesn't tell you how many files it touched. It's 300 plus.
Yeah.
But it will touch every file and fix it. I'm like, no, thank you. Like, thank you so much for fixing this. But we're not doing this right now.
Yeah.
So like, if we touch it, we fix it. Don't go off and like feel like you're going to like change the earth. And that's like 100% junior engineer. Like, I would do this thing and be like, I converted our app to TypeScript. They'd be like, did we need this?
Yeah.
No, but I read a blog post.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, remember those days? Like, I went to a conference talk, and then I rewrote our code into whatever random thing that someone said.
Yeah.
And, like, disapprove it. Like, we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's AI.
Yeah. Too enthusiastic, yeah. I had a hard time with Cursor because I don't remember what I was trying to do or, like, exactly what happened, but the gist of it was, I was trying to edit this file, and it was like, here's what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to do this stuff. I'm going to edit it like this. I'm like, cool, do it. It's like, done. And I was like, I'm looking at the diff. You've made zero changes. Can you do it? And it's like, yeah, sorry, my bad. I'll do it. And then it's like, it did no changes again. I was like,
oh, man, comedy.
Like, are you just going to keep telling me that you're going to do the changes and then not doing it? It's like,
gaslighting
yeah, that's
you.
What I'm doing. And I was like, all right, cool. Thanks for letting me know.
You got it on gas mode. It's just gassing you up. It's like, yeah, I got that. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't. This is my experience with Gemini CLI, which is, I feel like I should, like, this is my second glass now, our cup.
Yeah, Josh is coming through.
Yeah. Josh, thank you so much for giving me the confidence to share these stories. But Gemini has this router built in, and this is the world that AI is going to, where you don't really choose your models anymore. It just routes to the best model. Perplexity has this as well. Most of the, like, ChatGPT will route now. But Gemini's like, you pay $20 a month, Gemini Flash. It's like, oh, yeah, good idea. Gemini Flash, like, smallest model. I was like, hey, let's like rewrite some stuff. And it's like, cool. It like wrote one JavaScript file. I'm like, hey, the app's TypeScript. It's like, what's going on here? Yeah, but it's like, it's like, I know what I'm doing. Stop asking me questions. Here we go. Here's a JavaScript file. And yeah, it's actually comical and how bad it can be sometimes. But like, there's ways to make it better. Like, add rules, add context, make it read a file before you start writing code. Like, don't go to auto, like, vibe coding mode. Interact with it first before you go into, like, auto accept changes.
Yeah.
So I've learned a lot of that stuff in the last couple of months, and it's been rewarding, to say the least.
I guess the frustration is, like, when you're really deep, you're starting to feel like it's a real person talking to you. So you're like, hey, you sound like you know what you're doing. Why don't you do it? And it won't do it. And it's like, I forget that you actually don't know anything at all.
Yeah. It's a reflection of yourself. You're looking at the man in the mirror. It's like the AI is just reflecting back to what you are.
Yeah. But I wish it would be more humble. Be like, hey, actually, I don't know anything. But like, based on the info you've given me, this might maybe kind of work. Like, then I'd be like, all right, that's acceptable.
Well, you know what's fun is actually take like a Code Rabbit review and then tell like the quad model and be like, hey, critically review this review. And it'll be like, this model made a wrong decision. I think it hallucinated. And like, it just becomes super real when it's like, not them.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is dumb. Like, don't listen to this. Only take these changes.
Yeah.
And I love doing that because I'm like, now comment back on the repo and at mention the review bot. And then the review bot be like, no, they're wrong.
Nah.
And it'll just be like back and forth. And if you have enough of these review bots in there, it will at mention each other. And like, it's a back and forth that will just go off. So it's like one of those things where you like take the two phones, talk them to, actually phones are like this now.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is a rotary device that it's like these two phones and you like let it talk to each other. It gets a little fun in the review bots. I'll probably do a demo on this. I'll make a video about it. It's a lot of fun.
That seems fun to watch.
It is fun because like, if you tell Claude, cause I use Claude for like, and GitHub. But if you're like, hey Claude, GitHub reviewed the code like this, and then Claude would be like,
amateur.
Why do you keep using that tool? Like, it doesn't know what it's talking about. Like, this is how I would actually instruct the code. Ignore this stuff. Only change this.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, GitHub. Claude said. Claude said that you're
the gossip.
You're a wussy. I don't know. You cursed before.
Yeah.
I don't
know. You can say whatever you want. Yeah.
Okay.
This is not a family show.
Yeah. I can say it. Claude said you're a bitch.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. Claude said you don't have the cojones to actually review the code. You don't know what you're talking about. And then it finds your Claude token and deletes it.
Yeah. It's like, see what you, how do you like them apples?
Yeah. Actually, it's funny enough. I use GPT in my app. And every now and then the Claude model will be like, oh, I've actually rewritten to use Claude. And I'm like, no. Stop what you're doing right now. We use GPT for in-app browsing stuff. We use the Claude model to write the code. And it's just like, every now and then I get a little overzealous. I'm like, oh, hey, I wrote this plan up, but instead of using GPT 4.0, like, we're going to use Claude Sonnet for this, right? It's like, no, get out of here with that.
Oh, I love it, though.
Claude's literally a DevRel AI agent. Yeah. It's constantly selling you into stuff you should be using.
Yeah.
It's so funny, too, when, like because I use it to, I don't just say make a blog post for me. I pull in sources, stuff I've been working on. I'll tweak it in Claude. And be like, this is ready to ship. And then I start a new conversation, I paste it in, review this critically, and then it's like, when it's like,
man,
the phone things again.
Yeah, but it gives you the confidence. Like, it's like a Claude's just it's a developer of a couple beers in them.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I'm good, go all night.
Always on the bomber peak.
Yeah, all night. Until you run out of tokens. Yeah.
I guess that's the ultimate goal, is to just string you along until you spend all your money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the case for like when folks are doing Claude Code early days, where you're like, oh, don't pay the $100 or whatever it is. Let's just use tokens. And like quickly you're like, oh, I just wrote a commit message and I paid $14. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was using Klein. I think that's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
And it's like that, where it's like, oh, each thing you're doing is like a cent or whatever. But then, you know, $25 later, you're like, oh, okay, let's stop doing this.
This is good. This is like buying the first round of drinks. Like, hey, how many people are here? Yeah. Like, how do we get to this number?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's like there's, I think I was mentioning you a few weeks ago or when I was in SF last time. There's this project called Sniffly.dev, which works well with Claude Code. And it's like, I'm pretty new to Kubernetes still. And like my talk today, I was talking about Kubernetes and I had to get like a cluster up and stuff. My head of engineering is like, he has alerts on spend for Anthropic. And he's like, yeah, I can tell when Nick's like working on a demo because it's like, it goes from like $4 a day to like $180 or whatever. But it's, but the funny thing is like, that sounds super expensive, but at the same time, it's like, I spent like maybe a day and a half, just kind of troubleshoot something. And then I didn't bug anybody. So, like, somebody's salary, like, $180 is, like, a drop in the pond compared to, like, hey.
Oh, speak for yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. We actually track how our engineers and how much they spend on models and tokens because it actually helps influence how we plan our product and how folks will use it. But I think I was, like, rewriting the docs. I'll use, like, the Claude mode. Actually, using Opus because Opus is great for the context window and, like, deep thinking. So, if you're like, hey, look at all these PRs. Let's scaffold out some docs. And I think I did like a Monday and it was like $40 for the day.
Oh.
And I was like, oh man, amazing. Let's keep going. spend, baby. VC money.
Yeah.
But it's good to see. I like when I see those numbers. And like when I run a PR and it tells me like, oh, you spent 13 cents. It's like, oh, okay, cool. That's 13 cents of my time I didn't have to like spend going back and forth fixing types.
Yeah, totally worth it. As long as you're keeping an eye out.
Yeah, so going back to my tweet, like this is literally like we're in the heyday where I spent a ton of time not writing code, doing the whole DevRel thing where I'd like ship a bunch of tech debt and like a bunch of side projects. I think I had like one PR inside of GitHub my entire 5 years there because I knew like my code, I'm not maintaining that. And that was like the promise of like, if you're going to open a PR, we're going to ask you about it later.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I don't want that. I don't want that job. I didn't sign up for that. But nowadays I'm like, oh, I spent all summer basically doing Python and data science because I was super interested in like learning it, but I'm not going back to school for that. I'm like,
sure.
I'm not going to bug my friend to like do it for me. So I was just like, cool. So I built a thing that's like DLT Hub and DuckDB, which are just Python data science tools. But I built a sandbox to basically work inside of GitHub repos and like just start asking questions. It's actually what John built for us in the SQL editor thing. That's how I do like feature development. It's like just get in the SQL and like think about like what data I can show, like what charts I can put together based on the data I have at hand. So I just rebuilt it. And I was just like, I know how to architect this thing. So like I just got into the Claude desktop. It spit out a bunch of things. I might have did it 7 times, built out a plan for this, and then I finally was happy with like where it got to and how I would maintain it. And I've been like running this thing for the past 3 months. It's been running on a fly box.
That's awesome.
In production. Yeah.
That's for contributor.info, right?
Yeah. Contributor.info is like we called it pizza time back in the open source time. So pizza time was like our data pipeline. It was like rebuilding the GitHub archive. I essentially rebuilt that just through ideas and chatting with AI, because I wasn't the person that built it, but I knew like the concept, and I had a concept of a plan. And I took that plan and like implemented it, which is, yeah, I feel like I'm in a bit of a renaissance when it comes to AI and like getting back into my, getting my groove back, essentially.
So are you drinking from the fire hose, the events API from?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So the events API on GitHub, you go to api.com/events. You get, at the time I open source, it was every 7 minutes you get like new events. They've switched it to every hour, but you can just pull that and get every event, every repo you want. So I don't get every single repo.
Okay.
I only get like 51 repos. So if you're in contributor info, you can opt in, say, hey, I want this repo to be tracked. And like right now it's 53 or 52. And I'll just like run it on a daily crawling to like go catch it up. And I have like a clever thing where you're like, so this is like the problem with open source. It got very expensive because we had like 300,000 repos, but people are looking at maybe like 100. So instead I've inversed that, where if you ask for the repo, I will start tracking it. If you never the repo, I will delete it. So it's like page view based data fetching. So like if you
set up a bot to keep viewing it, and then
So basically, I set up some ingest and some Superbase edge functions that type right into my Superbase, and then basically like I keep logs of like who's viewing what, and so like all the repos I care about, the four of them that I look at all the time, it just stays always fresh. And then stuff like Microsoft VS Code, like no one's looking at that. Like it was just like a thing I showed once, like it deletes it.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to regress back a second to, you were saying you were learning Python and doing some data science stuff, whatever. You, as a established engineer, had success with that. I wonder what you think about people that are new to programming, want to get into the industry. Is AI hamstringing them because like they don't actually learn it right? What do you think?
Man, you say hamstring, but like I've got this Achilles thing that's happening right now because I play basketball twice a week. So I've been like doing these stretches to like, I don't want my Achilles to tear like a Jason Tatum. I'm not out for the season. I can't be out for the season. I got to travel. But yes. So like if you come out of college and you're like, man, how am I going to get a job? Or if I'm a boot camp grad, like, God bless you. But like my recommendation for a lot of folks, I was in Nigeria, did a workshop. Is like, you got to read a book. And it's like the inverse of like, I could learn how to code in 13 weeks or whatever it was, 6 weeks. Now you actually have to dig in to figure out like, why am I doing this? And like, when? And like before, you like spend all day every day like reading books and learning about languages and never implementing things. But the reason I would say like read a book or catch up that type of stuff is because you don't know what you don't know. So if you're like prompting, build me an app to do like whatever, my recommendation is like, you don't know if that's the wrong thing because you don't have the experience. And the only way to get the experience is by either building or asking other folks that know it, or just reading books. And a lot of folks won't ask, they won't reach out. Also, I don't have time to like sit up on a Zoom call and like mentor people. But if you came ready with like, hey, I read a book on like designing infrastructure at scale. I read that book earlier this year and I then built contributor info this summer. Like that helped navigate myself into like, oh, I should probably set up like job queues. Like in my mind, I was like, oh, set up a database and like write to it. It's like, oh, well, what happens like two people write at the database at the same time? Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
You just clobber the changes.
Yeah. Just overwrite stuff and like just make it work and like brute force, like whatever. Time complexity, algorithm, space time, red black tree, whatever. Like, who knows when they use that stuff? But it all makes sense when you start queuing jobs and you're like, okay, well, like, what if the same job but the same thing happens at the same time? Which one goes first? And then how do you like pop stuff off the stack if like you don't need it anymore?
Yeah.
So I have like a very clever algorithm. Like, if there are PRs that need to be indexed on my project, I will index the freshest data and then I'll go for any data that's missing. So I'm constantly always filling in the gap. So like, there's a PR comment that happens later, I'll go fetch that just to comment as a separate job. And then I run these jobs literally in parallel. And it's like literally in my repo. I just set up last night a way to parallelize GitHub Actions to like kick off these jobs and orchestrate all the stuff. I know way too much stuff about GitHub Actions and how to leverage it, but it's extremely useful now because I'm like, I would never want to build this myself or never want to maintain this. But like with like enough grit and determination, like you can get some pretty cool technologies out there.
No.
So, read books, kids.
Well said. All right. So you're not a fan of Will Smith eating spaghetti?
Man, you were on my Twitter.
Bringing the heat.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know where this came from, but someone asked in Midjourney or something. No, it wasn't Midjourney. It was like the original Sora or whatever. Like, they would generate this Will Smith eating spaghetti, and it was just, like, awful. Like, it was just weird, like a zombie that kind of looked like Will Smith and kind of eating.
Yeah.
But it was just, like, swallowing. And I guess the latest VO3, it could now do a proper Will Smith eating spaghetti. Yeah. But, like, how did that become the litmus? Like,
I don't know.
I think, actually, a good one is, like, gymnastics. If you ask the LLM to basically generate a video of someone doing, like, a specific gymnastics experience or move, it just, like, starts doing this weird, like, spiraling, like, a quintuple, like, backflip or whatever. It's just not realistic. It just starts spinning off the screen.
Forgets about physics.
Yeah, yeah. But the one thing, actually, if you go further in my Twitter feed, when Sora 2 launched, OpenAI had a string of videos. And the very first one's like, hey, Sora, give me a video of me doing a kickflip. And I used to skateboard in high school. It was very clearly a heel flip. So if you don't know about kickflips and heel flips, it just spins the other way. And I was like, that's dumb. Like, if you're going to worry about strawberries and R's, like, my tweet was like, kickflips are the new R in strawberries. Because it doesn't know what a kickflip is, obviously. But I guess the Will Smith eating spaghetti, like, we saw a problem. Yeah. You know, get the video to do an actual kickflip. And we're good. We've made AGI. We're there.
That's the final boss, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Kickflips.
You also tweeted something about iced coffee. I forget what it was. You like iced coffee a lot?
Probably. I don't know the context of that.
I forget too. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it was like super hot in San Francisco, and like I just grab an iced coffee and like cool myself off and do the rest of my day. But I go to the Blue Bottle on Second and Howard, pretty close to there. So if anybody's in town, I'll buy you a coffee.
They're gonna stalk you there now.
You buy me a coffee. What am I saying?
Yeah.
That's about all I had. Any other hobbies or interests or things you want to mention?
Man, hobbies, interest, man. A couple weeks ago, I vibe coded a game with my kids. I would never build. I know what goes into writing games, like, even in JavaScript. It's like too much work. Not for me.
Yeah.
But what's really cool, I vibe coded a game, a platformer, and then I went and downloaded a bunch of sprites off like a sprite kit. And I'm like, cool. And I was actually testing Gemini for this, but I was like, it actually did a good job on this. Like, Gemini, take the sprite kit, apply it to my game engine, and it did a pretty good job. So I was actually super, super proud of that. I do want to actually sit down one weekend and make the game work. So we built like one, it was like an RPG platformer thing. Sorry, those are two different things. But basically, it's like a platformer, but it was like in the RPG style where you like sort of roam the room and like jump and collect wands. So super simple game, because I know the mythical man month of like, if you have two men, it's going to take less time. It's not true.
Okay, so what do you want to plug before we end?
I will plug, if you are not using AI and you want to use AI in a way that's like self-hosted and like want to leverage in a way that doesn't sell your data off to a VC, continue. We can run local models, GPTOS 20B. Actually, today we were embargoed. We were working on this like NGX Spark. So NVIDIA shipped like essentially a Mac Mini sized device.
Okay.
That runs a GPU inside of it. So it's really cool. Super powerful. So you can get like a 320 billion parameter model, which 320, that's pretty large. A lot of the smaller like sonnets and stuff like that would be like a million or a billion. No, a trillion. Anyway.
One of those yens.
Yeah. Anyway, check out Continue. Check out contributor.info. I've been doing this open source project. I am 100% intentional not to make a company out of it. But if you are interested in this data, come find me. I'd happy to like show you the ropes and how to like navigate open source, but like for growing maintainership, not just sort of finding contribution, but like scaling yourself as a maintainer.
Nice. Hard problem to solve. So
it is.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for hosting, Nick.
Yeah,
thanks,
no
everyone,
worries,
for listening. If you'd like
you,
to please subscribe. Thanks, Josh. Leave us some ratings and reviews. We appreciate it. And we will catch you next time.
Stay saucy.
You've been watching Whiskey, Web, and Whatnot, recorded in front of a live studio audience.
What the fuck are you talking about, Chuck?
Enjoyed the show? Subscribe.
You know people don't pay attention to these, right?
Head to whiskey.fun for merch and to join our Discord server.
I'm serious. It's like 2% of people who actually click these links.
And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends about the show.
All right, dude. I'm out of here.
Still got it.